Hello, it's good to be here. It's the last few months have been an adventure for me. And of course, my whole life has been an adventure. And many years ago now, my wife was diagnosed with a fatal cancer, and they gave her 18 months to live. And I'm sitting in the waiting room at Advents Medical Center over in Portland. She's in surgery, and the surgeon came out and broke the news to me. And a good friend of mine was there, and he said, "Larry, there has to be sin in your life you need to get rid of, and God is punishing you." And I sat there, and I thought, God is punishing me? Well, I'm a sinner, I know that, but is that the God I know? And then it dawned on me that not that long prior to that, I'd been in Africa. And to make a long story short, a little boy came through the line where I was pretending to be a doctor. And we got him over his malaria. And his dad came several days later and said, "Because of you, my son lives." And I said to the young pastor who was sitting next to me as my interpreter, I said, "You need to go share Jesus with him, because I'm not the one that saved his son." And he did, and brought the whole family to Jesus. And I got home, and I got up in front of the church, and I said, "You know, I've just been to the devil's hometown, onto his front porch, and I snatched one away from him, and it felt good." And so here I am sitting at Advents Medical Center, and it suddenly dawned on me that I'd poked the stick in the devil's eye. And he was coming right into my house, right into my bedroom, to take my wife away from me. And so I got back up in front of church and I said, "From this point on, this is no longer a joke. I'm declaring war on the enemy." And I said, "I will go anywhere God sends me, and I'll do anything he asks me to do, no questions asked." And if you give God that kind of permission, you are in for an adventure. Well, now about the subject today. I have been struggling with what I'm supposed to talk about. Brad called me a few weeks ago, and I didn't know what to say. I don't know what to say to a bunch of saints, you know? And it took me back a few years ago. My daughter graduated, and they wanted me to do the commencement address. And there was going to be hundreds of people filling this big gymnasium, and I'm going to be up there in front. And I thought, oh my, what in the world do I say? And I knew months in advance. My wife kept asking me, "What are you going to talk about?" I said, "I don't know." And then the weekend came, and we're driving to where she was going to school in Spokane, Washington. And she said, "Do you know what you're going to talk about?" And I said, "No." And she says, "You're going to embarrass us, Larry. You're going to embarrass this whole family if you don't know what you're going to talk about." And so it came the day of. And we get up, and she said, "Do you know what you're going to say?" And I said, "No, I don't." And she goes, "I'm getting worried." And it came the hour of. I still didn't know what I was going to say. And I'm standing backstage getting ready to walk out on stage with the group that was going to do the graduation ceremony. And I got the text. I got the story. And I walked on stage, and I gave my wife a huge grin. And I started in on my tale. And the whole place got quiet. Now, in these things, usually people go to visit with each other. They don't go to see what's going up on up in front. And all of a sudden, I realized the whole place was quiet. And I thought, uh-oh, somebody's listening. And so it was this week. What do I say? What do I say? And I work at the hospital. And I do several jobs. And here I am helping patients out, and my phone rings. And I stepped into another room, and I looked, and I didn't recognize the number. And my first impression was just to hang up on it. But something told me, no, you're supposed to answer this call. So I answered the call, and there's a stammering and stuttering on the other end, and a lady says, "I'm sorry, sir, I forgot who I was calling." And I said, "Oh, my name's Larry Hamilton." And she goes, "Oh, Larry Hamilton, do you own Wilton Woodworking?" And I said, yes. And she goes, well, I'm with such and such a furniture restoration company in Chicago, Illinois. And immediately I thought, okay, she's trying to sell me something and I'm not interested in buying. And I was just about to say, I don't want any, and hang up. But no, I hung on the line. And she goes, well, I've been searching all over the state of Oregon trying to find somebody to help me. And I thought, okay, what are you searching for? Well, it appears that they had sold a very expensive antique to a person in Tillamook County and had had it shipped from Chicago to Tillamook, and it got here in immaculate condition and was put into place. And she put some large antique lamps on this beautiful cabinet and a large antique vase in the middle of it. And a week later, when she moved it to dust it, it had left impressions in the finish. And she was upset. And she called the company and wanted them to have this cabinet shipped back to the restoration company in Chicago, Illinois, to put a new finish on and to make sure it was cured before they sent it to her. And she was not happy with them. And this lady on the phone said, is there any way you can help her? And I thought, you know, this is a whole different league, and this is clear out of my league. And I don't know that I want to do this, but some little voice keeps saying, go take the job. And so the lady says, well, I can send you pictures. And I said, that's okay. So she sent me pictures by email. I gave her my email address, and I looked at it, and I thought, those look like water blemishes to me. And I said to the lady, that's no problem. I can just spray some blush remover on it, and it'll be gone like magic. And she goes, well, there's another problem. This lady is highly allergic. She said, you can't use any chemicals, and she doesn't want any odors in her home. And this cabinet is like 92 inches long. And I thought, I can't just move it outside. And I said, I tell you what, I'll call her and I'll go visit her and I'll see hands-on what's going on. And they said, oh, she said, that would be wonderful. That would be wonderful. So they hung up. I got done working. And that evening I called this lady and she goes, look, I don't know who you are. I don't want to disrespect you, but I want an expert to fix this, not just somebody they found online. And I said, hey, that's fine with me. I said, but while we're talking, I says, I live really close. I said, how about I just stop by tomorrow afternoon and I have a look? I said, it won't cost you anything. Well, I don't know, she said. And I said, well, I'll just stop by and I'll just look at it. And so the next afternoon, I put a few bags of trick in my attaché case, and I got dressed up really nice, and I went over to her really nice house, and I walked up to the door, and she gave me the once over to decide if she wanted me in the house or not. And she let me in the house, and she showed me this marvelous antique, and she said she paid over $10,000 for it. And I'm thinking, a piece of furniture with drawers for $10,000? Honestly, you know, is it worth it? And I thought, if you lived in Florida, ma'am, you'd be looking at a wasteland, and your cabinet would be gone, and there'd be no question about whether you can fix the finish or not. But I thought, no, no, Lord, that's not why I'm here. And so I looked at it, and yes, there were marks in the finish. And I said, ma'am, I said, and she's shining a bright light on it so that she can show me where this horrible damage is. And I thought, you know, that's not looking that bad. And so I got into my bag of tricks, and I have various grits of abrasive pads, and you start out a little bit coarse and you level out the finish, and then you go finer and finer and finer, and then you put some wax on it. And I said, ma'am, I tell you what, why don't you stand there with that light and watch me take care of this worst spot? And I said, and the minute you don't like what you see happening, I'll put everything back in my bag, I'll go out the door, and you'll owe nobody anything. I said, you said the finish is ruined anyhow, so I have nothing to lose. She goes, well, okay, but I'm watching you. And so she's standing there with this light watching. And I said, oh, Lord, if ever I needed your hand, before, I need it now. And next thing you know, that spot was gone. And I took some beeswax and I polished it. And she goes, I don't see it anymore. I said, now, isn't that just an astounding miracle? And I said, now, do you want me to go to the next spot? And she goes, well, okay. And I went to the next spot. And the next thing you know, she started sharing life experiences. And I began to realize I was there not to fix the furniture. I was there to listen to this lady share her life experiences and maybe put in a word or two for our good Lord. And I'm saying, now, Lord, how do I respond? He said, all I want you to do is listen right now, Larry. All I want you to do is listen. Hour and 15 minutes later, the top is back to its original condition. And I waxed it, and she goes, that's strange. I'm not having an allergic reaction. What kind of polish are you using? I said, just beeswax. I got it at Rosenberg's. And she goes, really? I didn't know there was such a thing. I said, well, it's right down the street, ma'am. It says right up there on the top shelf back there in the finishing department, right here. And she goes, well, I'll be. And she goes, you know, I think you were sent here for some reason other than to fix this finish. And I said, you know, I think you're right. And then good Lord says, you're done for now, my son. And I picked up my things. I bid her have a good day. And she says, well, what do I owe you? And I says, you don't owe me anything. I said, the restoration company's paying me. And I walked out the door. And I emailed the restoration company and I said, I think you have a satisfied customer, but I can't promise until you talk to her because stories can always change. So I'll find out Monday whether or not it was the truth. But, you know, I begin to think, why was I sent to the situation? One of my friends says, well, you're going to really charge them through the nose, aren't you? And I said, well, why? He says, that's a $10,000 cabinet. Do you have any idea what it would cost them to have it shipped back? I said, I know pretty close what exactly it would cost because you have to insure it and everything else, and you have to have special movers move it. I said, but I now have a friend in Tillamook that I didn't have before. And I said, next thing you know, I'm going to have a friend in Chicago, Illinois. And I said, isn't that why we're here? Isn't that what we're supposed to be doing? And then I started looking in the Bible, and I thought, what am I supposed to talk about tomorrow? And into my mind came the word generosity. Not long ago, a good friend of mine fixed me a lunch to take to work with me. And I discovered to make my own lunch, when you clock out, you can have the full time to eat. If you go to the cafeteria, then you got to go to the cafeteria and you got to get it. You got to pay for it. And you go back and half your lunch time's gone. So I can take my own lunch and I can enjoy the whole lunch period and just feast away sitting at my desk. Well, she fixed a really nice lunch for me and gave it to me and said, here, I'd like you to take this to work with you tomorrow. And I looked in there and it was marvelous. And I looked at her and I said, you know, there was a little boy that gave his lunch to Jesus many, many years ago, and Jesus multiplied it and fed 5,000 people. I said, if you were that little boy's mother, they would have gotten more than barley loaves and fishes. And I said, and she kind of looks at me and she goes, what are you talking about? And I said, you didn't have to give me this lunch. You didn't have to make it so nice. And I said, if that mother thousands of years ago knew what was going to happen to her son's lunch that day, would she have done anything different? And she goes, oh, you bet he would have. She would have. I said, she'd have put a few figs in there. She'd have put all everything in there she could find to put in there because Jesus was going to multiply it. I said, when you give a gift to somebody, if you give it generously, Jesus will multiply it generously. If you give it carefully, then I said, could it be he will multiply it carefully? She looked at me and I thought, here, I'm preaching this gal a sermon. I didn't even mean to. But So, how does that hold up in the Bible? Well, there are some stories in the Bible. And I just told you the one of the little boy and his lunch. But Jesus had some encounters. And in Luke chapter 18, and I'm reading out of the Message Bible, I go through the Bibles and I find the translation I like the best. Now, on this story, it's the Message Bible, and that's a paraphrase. Luke chapter 18. One day, one of the local officials asked Jesus, "Good teacher, what must I do to deserve eternal life?" Jesus said, "Why are you calling me good? No one is good, only God. You know the commandments, don't you? No illicit sex, no killing, no stealing, no lying. Honor your father and mother." He said, "I've kept them all for as long as I can remember." When Jesus heard that, he said, "Then there's only one thing left to do. Sell everything you own and give it away to the poor. You will have riches in heaven. Then come, follow me." This was the last thing the official expected to hear. He was very rich and became terribly sad. He was holding on to tight to a lot of things and not about to let them go. Seeing his reaction, Jesus said, "Do you have any idea how difficult it is for people who have it all to enter God's kingdom? I'd say it is easier to thread a camel through the needle's eye than to get a rich person into God's kingdom." "Then who has any chance at all?" the others asked. "No chance at all," Jesus said. "If you think you can pull it off yourself, every chance in the world, if you think you can pull it off yourself, you have no chance at all. But every chance in the world if you trust God to do it." Peter tried to regain some initiative. "We left everything we owned and followed you, didn't we?" "Yes," said Jesus, "and you won't regret it. No one who has sacrificed home, spouse, brothers, sisters, parents, children, whatever, will lose out. It will all come back multiplied many times in your lifetime." And then the bonus of eternal life. The part that fascinated me was it will come back multiplied many times in your lifetime. That's now. That's not then. So, there's another story. And this time, I have to go to my other Bible because Peterson didn't do the Old Testament. And there is a verse in Isaiah chapter 58 that until recently, I struggled with. It says, if you go down to 58 verse 6, the first part's telling about shouting with the trumpet, tell my people their sins, and so on and so forth. And he's really giving them the business. And they're talking about fasting. And he said, "What good is fasting when you keep on fighting and quarreling? This fasting will never get you anywhere with me. No, the kind of fast I want is that you stop oppressing those who work for you and treat them fairly and give them what they earn. I want you to share your food with the hungry and bring right into your own homes those who are helpless." Poor and destitute. Clothe those who are cold and don't hide from relatives that need your help. If you do these things, God will shed his own glorious light upon you. He will heal you. Your godliness will lead you forward, and goodness will be a shield before you, and the glory of the Lord will protect you from behind. Then when you call, the Lord will answer, "Yes, I am here," he will quickly reply. All you need to do is stop oppressing the weak and stop making false accusations and spreading vicious rumors. Feed the hungry, help those in trouble. Then your light will shine out from the darkness, and the darkness around you shall be as bright as day. It dawned on me the other day that sometimes those in the deepest darkness are those who are wealthy. Those who will pay $10,000 for a piece of furniture and they're afraid to use it because they paid $10,000 for it and it's an antique. I got home and was sitting at my desk to send the bill to this antique company, and my little dog came up and ran up, put her big claws on my roll top desk, and I petted her and I thought, you know, your claw marks don't matter to me because I'm getting affection. I didn't see any pets in that poor lady's house. And what a cold and dark place. And I was able to hopefully bring light in there. So the people in trouble, we don't know who they are, but God knows, and he can direct us to them. As I said, my wife passed away, and I like going on the youth mission trips of the Nazarene Church. We go every year down to Mexico, and we build a house or two. And it's always a good experience. And the last 2 years, at the last minute, the person that was supposed to be the speaker backed out. And so Stuart Simmons said, well, Larry, could you share? I said, sure, Stuart, I'll share some tall tales every evening. And so that year, I decided to share about hearing the voice of God. And every night I did a different story on hearing the voice of God. And I was feeling pretty good about it. I'm really straightening these kids out, you know. And halfway through the week, the house we're building is going really well. And I'm feeling pretty good about it. And all of a sudden I started vomiting and had this horrible pain in my side. And I thought, oh no, I'm in Mexico in a little town and I have a kidney stone. And this is not good. This is not good at all. And so I told one of the other fellows, I said, you better take me back where we're staying. And we're staying, they have a fairly nice place. The Nazarenes have built it there over the years. And I said, you better take me back. I said, I've got a kidney stone and this is going to be a miserable few days for me. And so he took me back where we were staying. And I got to stay in one of the only air-conditioned rooms. We had been sleeping upstairs on the floor. Well, I got a bed with an air conditioner and I thought, wow. I said, kidney stones have their advantages. And so here comes one of the dear ladies that was with the group, and she says, well, Larry, we better take you to the hospital. Well, I've been to Mexico before and I've been to Mexican hospitals, and I didn't know that I was really excited about the prospect, but I thought, at least down here they've got drugs. And I said, I think I probably need some. And so we went to a Mexican hospital. It so happened that there is a rehab center that we helped build down there. And this physician is the physician over the rehab center, a young doctor. I'd never met him before, but by now it's about 8 o'clock at night. He came into the hospital. He took me in a side door and put me in a very nice room with all this modern equipment. And he comes in and does a thorough workup to make sure it's a kidney stone and that this man isn't dying of something else, you know, on his watch. And I said to the lady there, I says, man, I'm in trouble. I said, I only brought a credit card with $1,000 limit. I said, just walking through the door, I know I've already exceeded that. And she goes, Larry, don't worry about it. We'll help you. We'll help you. And so he had the young nurse come in and she started an IV and she put some bag up that wasn't labeled and she squirted something into it. And next thing you know, the pain was gone. And I says, I don't know what that is, but I'm enjoying this feeling of no pain. And he came in and he smiled and he said, yes, you have a kidney stone. And he said, we don't have the technology here to take care of it. I'd had one taken out before and they had to use a laser and blast it. And he said, but here's some medication that will get you through until you get back to the United States home where they can take care of it. And I said, well, thank you, sir. And he said, this is not a narcotic. This is some big fancy name. And he said, but don't take it more than every 8 hours. And I said, okay. And he said, and you can stop by the pharmacy here in the hospital and pay your bill. I thought, oh no. So I went to the pharmacy there in the hospital and I'm expecting some huge bill. And the bill was $95. He charged me $20 for coming in after hours. And I looked at the lady and I says, I don't believe it. This is incredible. I'm pain-free and I'm not broke. I said, now there's a miracle for you. And so we went back and we finished the house and we had a good time and I'm taking these pills faithfully. And I still knew this kidney stone was there, but it wasn't bothering me until we got in the long line to cross the border. The line was 2 hours long and we got there first thing in the morning. We got there before the border opened, but the people were lined up. And this was it to the Tecate border, which is a smaller crossing. And we finally get across the border, and I am in agony. And they said, well, you better be taking those pills. I said, well, I've been taking them every 2 hours. And he told me not to take them more often than every 8 hours. But I got on my phone. I work for Adventist Health, and there's Adventist hospitals all the way from the border all the way up the I-5 corridor. And so I begin to Google search which one had urology, and this was on a Sunday. So I thought, now, what are my chances? Well, there's a hospital right next to where my sister lives in California that's an Adventist hospital, and it's a very nice one, and they have 24-hour coverage, 7 days a week. I said, great. I said, I can live until you get me to that hospital. And I said, just drop me off at the door. You guys go on home to Oregon, and I'll get my sister to come bail me out, and I'll figure out a way to get home. So they dropped me off at the door. Well, we'd basically been camping for a week, and my clothes weren't the cleanest, and my hat was kind of crumpled, and I had my essentials in a backpack, and I didn't even think about it. I walked in the door, and I looked like a homeless man, if ever a homeless man looked like a homeless man. And I went to the desk. I said, ma'am, my name's Larry Hamilton, and I'm on my way home from a mission trip in Mexico. And she looks at me, and she goes, uh-huh. And I said, here's my insurance card. And she goes, uh-huh. And so she types me in, and she spelled my name wrong. And I said, ma'am, you spelled my name wrong. And she goes, do you have any idea how hard it is to change that? And I said, well, actually, I know exactly how hard it is because I do it every day. And she kind of looks at me, and she goes, well. And so she retypes it, gives me the name band with the proper name on it. And I said, you know, I could have kept the other one. Then I wouldn't have to pay the bill. Oh, that was not the right thing to say. That was not the right thing to say because they charged me $100 before they would even type me in. I had to pay $100 copay. And I'm not dissing Adventist Health, but that's the way it is. It doesn't matter which organization you go with. There's a cost involved. And then she said, there is a spot for you to wait. And there's a waiting room about as big as this room here with 25 chairs in it. And they were 6 feet apart. And there are these hard plastic chairs. And I sat down and I thought, And I look around and I'm the only white guy in the waiting room. They were Hispanics and African-American farm workers. I mean, we eat the food they grow, so they are important people, believe it or not. But there I sit in the middle of them. And I soon found out I'm being treated like a homeless person. It's a 39-bed emergency room. I saw other people come in and be taken straight back. I'm in the waiting room. Sooner or later, they called me back into a triage room. A young physician's assistant checked me out, and she goes, well, we'll get some lab work, and we'll get a CT scan, and you can go back in the waiting room. Okay, well, this isn't what happened in Mexico. And so I went back to the waiting room. About an hour later, they came, and they did lab work back to the waiting room. But she had wanted to see what I'd been given in Mexico, and she said, well, can I keep these pills and find out what they are? She took my pills away. And I'm starting to hurt. And so a young lady came in and sat the next only other empty chair, not very far away from me, and she was vomiting. And I thought, that poor gal looks like she's in drug withdrawal. And so the gal that was with her went, found one of the nurses and said, well, can you help her? And she said, looks at her computer and said, no, it's not her turn yet. And so here I sit. 2 hours they took me to CT scan. Fell really rough and abrupt, get in the chair. I get into the scan and he says, get on the table. Well, my wife had one every 3 months for 20 years, so I know all about CT scans. So I got on the table and assumed the position. Without comment, he took the scans, get back in the chair. I thought, what is going on here? And I'm thinking, I work for this organization. There's words going to be spoken when I'm done with this experience. And I get back in the chair and I said, sir, do you have any idea how much longer it's going to be? He said, we're way behind today. He said, it'll be at least 2 hours before they look at the scan. Takes me back to the waiting room, sits me in the chair, and leaves. Well, I'd about had it with the pain. I found a person and I said, is there any way? I said, I have medication, but they took it in triage. I said, could I get my medication back at least? And she looks at me and she goes, you're not my problem. And so there I sit in a waiting room in an Adventist hospital in pain. And I'm looking around me and I said, dear Lord, what is going on here? And then I remembered a phone call I'd had before I'd left from a person in trouble. Your wife passed away, yes. Is there any way I could borrow her car? I have nowhere to live. Could I stay in her car? I said, no, you can't stay in her car. I said, you're not my problem. I said, I'm giving it away to a relative. And then a week or two later, I get this phone call. Well, I know your wife passed away, and I know that she had a lot of medication. I'm going into withdrawals. Is there any way you could help me out? And I said, you made your bed, go lay in it. Your addiction is not my problem. I said, delete my number out of your phone. I said, I don't want to hear from you again. I was feeling very pious about it. Off to Mexico, I went to tell these youth about hearing the voice of God. And here I sit in a waiting room. And all of a sudden, I start hearing the echoings back of the things I had said to people and how I had treated them. And I said, dear Lord, if you get me out of this alive, when I get home, I promise you, I will treat people differently. And they came, they called me back after 5 hours. They said, you have a kidney stone, it's just an infection. And we don't like the medication the doctor in Mexico gave you, so here's some ibuprofen and here's an antibiotic and you can get it down the street at Rite Aid. They're open 24 hours a day and have a good day. I called my sister. I said, please come rescue me from this place. And she came and got me. And so I began to describe it. She goes, oh, that x-ray guy? We go to church with him. We know him. And I says, So she took me to her home. I called my son. He said, well, Dad, he said, we'll get you home. So he flew me home first class. And he said, I don't want you having to sit squished up next to somebody when you're in pain. And he met me at the airport and brought me home. And I'm trying to call my favorite physician in the morning, 8 o'clock Monday morning, because I knew he'd help me. Couldn't get him to answer the phone. Couldn't get him to answer the phone. Phone rings. Gal said, I have a car now. I have a job. Just wanted to know if I could park in your driveway because I don't feel safe parking anywhere else. And I hesitated and she said, are you okay? I said, no, I've got a kidney stone. She goes, well, what are you doing at home? She said, get down there to that emergency room. I said, I just paid $100 to be in an emergency room. I don't want to pay another $100 because I know what they're going to tell me. And she goes, if you don't come out, I'm coming in. Now get out here. So I got out, got in her car. I worked the jail for 5 years, so I know a number of people. And I scooched way down. She said, what are you scooching down for? I says, I don't want to be seen with you. And she goes, well, why not? And I started thinking, okay, Lord, what is going on here? What is going on? She took me to the emergency room and I got out. They know me there. They took me straight in. They took me to the scanner. They gave me good stuff. They got me out of pain. Doc comes out and says, you have a stone the size of a pencil eraser. And I said, my goodness. And she said, but it's almost the bladder. She goes, so if it passes the next day, all's well. She goes, so here's some medication. She goes, but you're not going home after we give you this medication alone. And I said, well, there's a friend that will give me a ride home. And they said, okay, are you sure? I says, I'm beginning to get more sure all the time. I called her. She came and picked me up. And as she took me to Tillamook Pharmacy, I said, now this prescription's mine. It's not for you. And she laughed and she goes, I don't need it. And we got to the pharmacy. And as she was pulling into the pharmacy parking lot, the pain was gone. The stone passed. Haven't had it since. And she said, now, I said, here's how I am going to help you. And we begin to outline a plan. And everybody that's come to my door, to the best of my knowledge, since that day, I've done my best to help them. And my question to God was, where is this money coming from? I don't understand. I have no clue. The day or two before I'll need it, there it will be. And I'm not talking about small amounts. I'm talking about large amounts. And God has overwhelmingly blessed me, including the lunch I was made the other day. And people look on and say, you're crazy. I said, I may be crazy, but I'm putting money in the bank of heaven, my friends. And when the storms come and they blow my house away, they might blow my shop away, it might be all gone. It doesn't matter, because now I have a lot of friends that are going to help me out. And they're all in the most unexpected places. And so it is, if I don't share anything else with you today, generosity is a key to salvation. If you're as a Christian saved, and you know what it means to be saved, you don't have to worry about the future. You don't have to worry about where your next meal is going to come from. You don't have to worry about whether you have money and savings or not. Trust me, you don't have to. And I say that very carefully. But Luke 11 had another interesting story. Luke 11 says, Luke 11:37, and this is out of the Living Bible. As he was speaking, one of the Pharisees asked him home for a meal. When Jesus arrived, he sat down to eat without first performing the ceremonial washing required by Jewish custom. This greatly surprised his host. Then Jesus said to him, you Pharisees wash the outside, but inside you are still dirty, full of greed and wickedness. Fools! Didn't God make the inside as well as the outside? And here is the part that jumped out at me. Purity is best described, purity is best demonstrated by generosity. Wow. So I'm looking at the Bible through new eyes now. I look at life through new eyes. I'm no longer worried about what am I going to do when I retire. I'm not worried about retiring. Somebody asked me the other day, well, when are you going to retire? I said, when I slump dead over my workbench, or I slump dead over my desk at work, then I'm going to retire. And they said, really? Well, can't you retire now? And I says, no. I says, I'm too busy helping people. And so it is. The next time you're a mom and you're fixing your little boy a lunch, think about Jesus and how you don't know, but what that little boy might not eat his lunch all day in order to share it with somebody, and God just might multiply it. And how much of a blessing do you think it would be if that lunch was multiplied 5,000 times? Because that is what our Lord is able to do. If you give generously, he multiplies generously. If you give sparingly, he multiplies sparingly, because that's all you gave him to work with. It doesn't matter if you're wealthy, doesn't matter if you're poor. We all have needs. And if you put yourself in the right position, God will send you to represent him into whatever home it happens to be. And that's my story today, and I'm sticking with it. Thank you.